Matthew 26:47. Jesus has already said his prayers of not my will, but thy will be done. And he says in verse 46, rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. While he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came. With him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he. Hold him fast. Why did he do it? Why did Judas do it? He went to the elders and he said, how much will you give me if I betray him? It was all about money. What if they'd have said $1? Would he have done it for $1? Probably not. $100? I mean, 30 pieces of silver. And he said, that's enough. It's the price of a slave. They bought land with it and put a graveyard there. Potter's Field. For 30 pieces of silver. And so the question we asked last week, and again, it needs to be in our hearts. And, you know, how much would it take to buy us off? What's our number? What's the value of compromising our soul, our conscience, our friend, our Savior? To say, I don't know him. By the way, Peter did that for I don't know him. The one I kiss. Not, he's the one, he normally wears, you know, a blue shirt. He didn't describe him. He said, the one I kiss. He walked into that scene, went up to Jesus and kissed him, showing affection. And what did Jesus say? Verse 50, friend, wherefore art thou come? He left in the middle of the Passover meal, before the Lord's Supper, the communion was instituted. He left. Now he comes back. He knew where they'd be, didn't he? He knew where to go. This was common. This was the routine of Jesus whenever he was in Jerusalem. He loved that place. What's on the other side of that hill? Bethany. So if they didn't come there in the garden or there at Gethsemane, they just have continued on and found him somewhere else. But that was his place. He loved that place. Knew where to find them. Where art thou come? And they came and laid hands on Jesus and took him. Immediately, they just jumped right in, charged right in, leaving Judas with an unanswered question, wherefore art thou come? One of them, which were with Jesus, stretched out his hand, drew his sword, struck a servant of the high priest, and smote off his ear. I don't know if he is aiming for his neck. But he made a point, didn't he? And Jesus said, put up again thy sword into its place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. And we know that Jesus healed that man's ear. Put it back. And look at what he says in 53. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father? He shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels. He said, Peter, this is all part of what is planned. I don't need you to defend me. Peter said, all these will offend you, but not me. He draws the sword. He's the first to fight. He meant it. But it's at this point now where Jesus steps in and tells him what he did was wrong and undoes what Peter did and put the ear back. And now Peter says, well, my decisions are not the right decisions. I don't know what to do anymore. Y'all understand? Y'all comprehend that? You try to do something for somebody and they say that's not the right thing, and then you go, well, then I don't know how to help you. So really consider that. Really understand. Because I don't want to give the impression that I'm being negative about Simon Peter. His heart was right. He said, I'm going to go all the way. And he meant it. He did. But here Jesus says, your plan is the wrong plan. Verse 54, how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled? This must be. Thus it must be. In the same hour, said Jesus to the multitudes, as against a thief, swords and staves for to take me? I sat daily with you. You laid no hold on me. But all this was done that the scripture of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then the disciples forsook him and fled. Okay, it's a great point, and it allows us this distinction. Who is Jesus? Romans. And Jesus' ministry was to the Jews. So it is a great point, is why did Judas have to point him out? Why didn't they already know who Jesus was? By the way, there were Romans who knew who Jesus was. But these were, you know, soldiers, footmen. They weren't familiar with him. But it's a because you would think at this point everybody knows who Jesus is. And he comes walking down the street, there's a parade, and people are loud, and he says the rocks will cry out, and they lay down palms, and should everybody know who he is? Yeah, but evidently they didn't. Well, excuse me, when you, and it's just like the conversation we had before we started. When we see the what works and see what doesn't work, and you say, this is a healing of an ear, like as ear cut off, ear put back. But when people, and that's why we have to be so careful, and you run into this, and if not careful, we'll get caught up in this. But we have an opinion, and we take a stand, and then no matter what happens in the world, we're not moving. We're not shifting our stance. And it's what they did. They were so jealous and so hateful against Christ, it wouldn't matter what he did. I mean, what more could he do except come back from the dead, Brother Ronnie? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is exactly right. And I saw, this is kind of something I had for later, but a comment from George Soros. And he said, I don't make ethical judgments on the thing or social. I don't care what social consequences there are. I make money. And that's his words. He said, to me, it's all about making money. So are there consequences? It doesn't affect me. I don't care. It's just profit. And people who are so committed to their career, their job, their profession, that they say, I don't care what the outcome is. This is just what put it. I'm detached. No emotions involved. No connection to what I'm doing. It's just my job. And so that you see here with the Roman soldiers, I mean, don't forget there were soldiers, guards placed at the tomb. They know what happened, but they paid them to lie. Again, what's it all about? Follow the money. And that's why Judas, these soldiers, follow the money and go back and ask ourselves, and what does the Bible say? The love of money is the root of all evil. When we just want to get more, that's where we get in trouble. Again, it's a tool, but when we make it a possession, when it possesses us, it's no longer a tool. They were doing their jobs. They were under orders. That's never a good excuse. Well, that's what my boss told me to do. At some point, you got to say, I can't compromise. So he put his ear back. They all forsook him and fled. Peter said, everybody else will forsake you, right? They'll deny you. They'll walk away, but not me. In the end, everybody left. Because they didn't want to go to jail. They didn't want to get killed. Because their self-preservation. Disappointment, okay, or confusion, right? I thought we were going to fight this out. Now he says we can't fight. Retreat. All things work together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It all strings together. But that's the point. They all forsook him. So they that had laid hold on Jesus led him away to Caiaphas the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. Peter followed afar off to the high priest's palace, and he went in, sat with the servants to see the end. He wanted to see what happened. Verse 59, the chief priests, elders, all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death. Look, it's not enough to have witnesses. We got to have somebody that's going to say he did something so egregious that he's got to be put to death. Right? We've witnessed this. We've witnessed this type of behavior by those in control in our lifetime. Recent. Verse 60, but they found none. Nobody, that, like whatever they came up with wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. Yet though they had many false witnesses, they found none. Verse 60, at last came two false witnesses. Mouth of two or three witnesses shall everything be established, right? Had to have two that could agree on their lie. And said, verse 61, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. Is that a false witness? That's not false. That's true. He said that. Who heard him say that? This was somebody from the church. This was somebody in the group. They were there. He was telling his disciples that. Remember? I mean, we could go back and look at it. The disciples were showing him, oh, look at these buildings, isn't it? He said, I'll tear down this temple and build it in 3 days. Somebody in that audience, one of the ones who attended that service, if you will, showed up and said, I got something to say. Doesn't say they got paid to say it either, does it? So what caused it? Peer pressure? Maybe they, now that he was arrested, and now that he didn't put up a fight, now maybe they say, well, guess he's not who he said he was. Just that easily, their faith is tested and compromised and washed out. Verse 62, and the high priest rose and said unto him, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? Verse 63, Jesus held his peace. By the way, you're the only one who can hold your peace. You're in complete control of your peace. And when you give the keys to somebody else, you're in trouble. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus said to him, thou hast said. Nevertheless, I say unto you, hereafter shall you see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. And the high priest rent his clothes, saying, he has spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now you have heard his blasphemy. What think ye? And they answered and said, he is guilty of death. Then did they, verse 67, spit in his face, buffeted him, smote him with the palms of their hands, and saying, prophesy unto us, who is it that smote thee? Imagine these so drunk on their hatred, their jealousy, and that mob mentality. They're caught up in the moment and trying to impress their bosses, the elders, trying to impress them. And if you've ever seen somebody that's trying to impress somebody, they exaggerate everything. They take everything too far. I just can't imagine what it would be like to be these people. Either when he rose from the grave or when they took their last breath and stood before God. To have taken it so far as to slap the Lord with their open hand. And then here we go, verse 69 through 75. Peter sat outside the palace, and the damsel came to him. Thou also wast with Jesus of Galilee. That's right, I was. I'm his best friend. I was up there in the hill praying with him just before they arrested him. I was there. I walked on water with him at Galilee. I passed out fish and bread on the seashore. That was me. I was there. Is that what we would do? No, I saw you were with him. I recognize you. You were with him. I don't know him. Verse 70, he denied before them all, saying, I know not what thou sayest. Verse 71, he went out to the porch. He moved. Another maid saw him and said to them that were there, oh, this was also of Nazareth. You notice in the first part it was Jesus of Galilee. Now it's Jesus of Nazareth. By the way, Nazareth is in the region of Galilee, but we've narrowed it down from being in this broad place to this narrow place, this city. Again, he denied with an oath. I swear, I don't know him. Not me. You got me confused with somebody else. I mean, this is, right. Of all the places that Peter went with Jesus, and now he doesn't even know. I don't know him. Don't know him. I do not know the man. After a while, you imagine that after did it even register with Simon at any point to look over where the chickens were? To think about the night before when he told Jesus, all these other guys will, but I won't. Him they that stood by and said to Peter, verse 73, surely thou also art one of them, thy speech bewrayeth thee. Your accent, the way you talk. Then, what did he do? He changed the way he talked. How was he convincing them that he was not a Christian? He cursed and swore, saying, I know not the man. Look at what it says. Verse 75, and Peter remembered the word of Jesus. He said to him, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And he went out and wept bitterly. Why? What would your answer be? Why did Peter deny them? But denied Jesus those three times. Why? Fear. Got in the flesh, didn't he? Man on the side, on the other cross said, remember me when thou enterest into thy kingdom. Peter wasn't thinking about the kingdom. I know that these things had to come to pass. There are certain things. Once Jesus told him, you're going to deny me, there was no turning back. It had to happen. But when we get in the flesh and we're so mindful about staying here instead of what waits us over there, we compromise. We back away from what we know is true. When we think about glory here instead of glory there. Reputation here instead of reputation there. Well, the next morning they took counsel how they were going to put him to death. Verse 2, they bound him, led him away, delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Verse 3, and Judas had betrayed him when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself. And brought again 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned. Now, I don't know if he made that confession to the Father or not. He recognized his sin. He repented himself. They said, verse 4, what is that to us? Boy. That's what partners in crime will do. What's that got to do with me? You got caught? What's that got to do with me? You got in trouble? What's that got to do with me? He cast down the pieces and departed and hanged himself. And the chief priest said, well, we can't just put this money back in the collections. Wouldn't be right. Isn't it incredible the things they determine are right? Right? This is what they call dark money, right? Slush fund. But right and wrong, right? I mean, how is that less right than betraying, paying people to lie in court, betraying Jesus? But somehow that's not right. We can't do that. So they bought the potter's field, very strangers in, verse 7, verse 8. That field was called the field of blood to this day. Verse 11, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, art thou king of the Jews? And Jesus said, thou sayest. Same thing he told him earlier. When he was accused of the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. What is there to say? And I know this has irritated me in my life when I saw my friends harassed and lied about, and they didn't say anything. And then I grew up and realized why. And I think, well, I don't know. I won't give credit to the author. I'll just tell you it's not my saying. But if you throw rocks at every dog that barks at you, you never get anywhere. And that's the problem. We don't have to engage in every argument we're invited to, every debate. And Jesus just didn't answer them. Had nothing to say. He said nothing. Verse 13, Pilate said, then said Pilate to him, "Hearest thou not how many things these witness against thee?" And he answered him, "Never a word." Insomuch the governor marveled. He just believed that this guy who had been teaching all across the country now has nothing to say. Why? Why wouldn't he say something? What difference would it make? How about this? How about that he would be so convincing and so persuasive that they'd have to let him go and that would defeat the purpose of him coming? What? They would have kept fighting. They wanted him dead. They wanted him gone. So he just let it go. He didn't try to stop it. He said, "Not my will, but thy will be done." He didn't want to do it, but he had to do it. No reason to fight it. Yeah. Where are those 12 legions of angels? This was why he was here. That's what he told Peter. He put the sword. He said, it's got to happen. I'm not going to fight it. I'm not. Right? They bound him. You imagine? Why did they have to bind Jesus? He wasn't throwing hands. He was ready to go with them. And Matthew doesn't give the account, but remember they said, "We've come for Jesus of Nazareth." And he said, "I am." And they, boom. No argument. But then there's this thing at Passover where they release a prisoner, and they had one, a murderous thug named Barabbas. This is not in Matthew's writing. This is my commentary. And they were gathered together, and Pilate said, "Whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ?" Verse 18, he knew that for envy they delivered. It was just envy. He says, surely they're not going to send this man to execution. Surely they wouldn't let a murderer free in the streets. Guys, we're seeing this stuff happen today. Because people have aligned themselves with opinions, and they, but we can't put the 30 pieces of silver back in the treasury. Their judgment. They have this sense of values that makes them feel holy and righteous, but when you connect it with all the other stuff they do, it makes no sense. And how anybody could align with such ignorance, I don't understand. But anyway, envy, jealousy, murder, hatred in their hearts. Verse 19, when he was set down on the seat, his wife sent unto him, saying, "Have thou nothing to do with that just man? I've suffered many things on this day in a dream because of him." Now, how many of you guys know that the best counsel you ever receive is from your wife? It's the easy one, guys. Raise your hand. She's going to give you the best. She's going to steer you in the right direction. She's going to steer you in the right direction. And so she says, "Have nothing to do." He's a just man. And she said, "I've been having nightmares over this guy. It is really troubling me." Verse 20, but the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask us and destroy Jesus. Did who have a choice? Mm-hmm. understand what you're saying. Like when the Bible says, and God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Yeah. Well, and it's like Jesus said for Judas, it has to happen, but it were better for that man if he had never born that he's going to betray the Son of Man. So, yeah, it is a great point to say, and this is where we come into all things are known by God, even in the future, is he doesn't force any of us to do anything, but he knows us enough that he can gather the right people together to get anything done. Right? What is a church? Does everybody fit in Capitol Heights Church? Right? Some people come in there and they attend and they say, well, you know, it's not for me. And we're here. So God has brought us together. Whatever similarities, whatever differences there are, God has pulled the people together to get the stuff done that he wants done. Right? You agree with that? So in that same idea, that same train of thought, he can pull the people together. He doesn't have to force them to do anything. He knows how wicked their heart is. And he can put the right people together to get anything accomplished. Including that, yes, they had a choice, but that was the choice they made. That's a great point. When you look at the challenge, not only in this time, but even throughout the New Testament in the book of Acts and the dealings with Paul, the Jews who were converted and became Christians faced a lot of hardship. I mean, they had to collect money to send back to give to these poor Jews who nobody would employ anymore. They wouldn't shop at their stores. They kicked them out of their families because they followed Jesus. So at this moment, when the chief priest comes along, by the way, chief priest, that's like, man, you know the chief priest? He talks to you. He's a friend of yours. Chief priest comes along and says, hey, we want Barabbas to be set free. Yes, sir. We're taught to respect these people, right? To honor these people. At office, we say. At least respect the office. And then something like this comes along and they say, crucify him, let him go. Well, this guy preaches something they don't like. This guy kills people. This guy raises them from the dead. They want this one to die. And yet, they fall back on, well, I mean, but that's a chief priest. Right? The government would never steer us wrong. I mean, that's, guys, at some point, you gotta take control and possession and responsibility for your own brain. So, his wife says, leave it alone. And he says to the people, okay, this one is Jesus. What do you want to do with him? Crucify him. What evil hath he done? Verse 23. But they don't answer that. They say, let him be crucified. Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing. Verse 24, that rather a tumult was made. So he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I'm innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it. He didn't release them. He turned Jesus over to them. And they answered, verse 25, his blood be upon us and on our children. That is blind
hatred.
Such hatred. Guys, when you look at what's going on in our country right now, we have to realize that it's our children and grandchildren that are going to pay for it. Lest the Lord comes back, it's our children and grandchildren that are going to pay for what's going on, what's been happening in this country. And you look back at the depression, the hardship that people faced, and it made our country and our people stronger. And what we're doing right now is making everybody weaker. Oh, well, we don't want you to suffer. Anyway, the point is that we're exactly what happened then. Now, I know, you know, take Jesus out of it, but the mentality of hatred and anger and bitterness and blindness to consequences, that same train is on the tracks now. And that's what we're dealing with. Any questions, comments? Let's take a break.